I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to the Jones Press podcast. Today we are lucky enough to have two writers from DC Adventures, from Green Ronin. We have both Seth Johnson, otherwise known as Inkslinger online, and we've got...
Hey there.
Hey, Seth. For a return visit, we have Steve Conan Tristram, who is the head of Misfit Studios, who's talked to us before about his work on DC. How you doing, Steve?
Not too bad, but I'm going to correct you for the second time. It's Tristram.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
I corrected you last time, too.
I got to write this down.
Just remember, it's like honest alcohol. Trust and rum.
Trust and rum. That's a beautiful thing. All right. That's a nice mnemonic. I'll hang on to that one.
You have no idea how often I have to use it.
Okay. Tristram. All right. I'll hang on to that. So, hey, I'm a loser who didn't go to Gen Con. Are you guys also losers who didn't go to Gen Con?
Yeah.
Yeah, no Gen Con for me, but I was trapped at home by deadlines, DCA deadlines, actually, so next year.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, that and I'm Canadian, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit
was
of a
it
long
no Canadian year at Gen Con? Or?
Well, no, it's just a bit of a longer haul, right? And
I suppose.
So.
Yeah. It used to be a lot easier for me when I lived in Wisconsin and Gen Con was in Milwaukee. Now it's in Indianapolis and I live up by Seattle, so longer trip for me, too.
Yeah, I grew up in Indianapolis and I try to avoid going back to the city for any reason whatsoever, but... Every year I read these posts on Twitter, people's blogs like, oh, we went to this restaurant in Indianapolis and it was fabulous and it was great. And I'm like, it's Indianapolis. You can only have so much fun. I mean, really.
So you're like, I got food poisoning there. I remember that place.
I used to work in the kitchen. I can tell you some stories. Yeah, it's a thing. Well, hey, Seth, we've got kind of this ad hoc tradition here at Vigilance Press. We occasionally ask new guests what their plan is for the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, zombie apocalypse. Well, you know, let's see. I would plan ahead for the long haul, and assuming, you know, I'd have my wife with me, and we'd have our go bags and be equipped. I'd probably try and make my way to the largest library I could. You know, I figure I could build walls out of shelves, and if I managed to successfully hold off the zombies, I'd have plenty to read. So, handle it that way.
You were the first person to ever go to the library.
Well, you know, they're usually very fortifiable too. So
you're going to be food, Seth. You're going to be food.
Yeah, zombies are after brains, not books, you know? I might be safe. You never know.
Yeah, but see, you're actually exercising your brain, so it's like...
Steve, we just lose you?
You're making it more...
That is Steve's...
No, maybe.
Steve's wireless is acting up, folks.
Yeah. I said that if he's going to the library, he's exercising his brain, so he's actually, like, tenderizing it for the zombies.
You might have a point,
I
Seth.
I have to rethink my plan. Maybe I'll do some research on better plans while I'm there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Seth, let's start off with you, since we have talked to Steve before. What character are you allowed to talk to us about from DC?
Oh, boy. I ended up doing a ton of different characters, but one that's kind of representative of a bunch that I did is I did Cobra. So I got to do the terrorist leader Cobra, which was a lot of fun to work up, because he's a character with a long history. But it's all still in there. There hasn't really been a reboot to the character. He's a character whose legacy was passed from the first Cobra, Jason Burr, onto his brother Jeffrey Burr, who's the guy I got to write up. Who's definitely a character who's much more focused on things other than powers. He has some powers to represent some of his gear. So he has some ceremonial armor, and he has his kind of serpent fang sword staff that he carries around to stab people with, and he's got the 1 point immortality, but aside from that, it's pretty much all advantages. And then he has one special feature in that due to his extensive wealth and resources, due to the cult and his organization, he pretty much has as many points of equipment as he needs for his plot. So it's almost he's a PL-10 character, but it's almost got kind of a PLX feel to it.
Oh, cool, cool. Hey, you know, I have to confess, I've always wanted to see a Cobra Commander Cobra with a K crossover.
That would be pretty cool. You know, I could see them fighting for some of the same goals.
Yeah. So that's pretty nifty. So he's largely skill-based, just a few powers here and there, just the immortality from the Lazarus Pit and stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah, he's largely skill-based and advantages-based. He's got a whole pile of advantages. And then in Heroes and Villains, we also include the stats for a lot of his different minions, since they're the ones that heroes will be facing more often. So, you know, he's got the Bestowed, who are his kind of... blood magic spellcasters that he sends out, and then his lanceheads as well, who are kind of his foot soldiers, who actually carry around some equipment that for the hardcore Cobra fans who read the series back in the 70s will recognize some of the equipment that Cobra stole way back then, still being used by some of his minions now.
Oh, cool. So you probably also have the lancehead and the Nagas and whatnot.
Yep, Yep, it's kind of a full slate of minions for hero beating up pleasure.
Now, you know, he really kind of reminds me of the old armored Mastermind in the Mutants and Mastermind Second Ed, which I guess is irrelevant now that we're in the Third Ed. But
yeah, it's somewhat similar to that. I think this particular Cobra is much more focused on strategy and tactics over, you know, being in the thick of it. So he has the armor, but it's almost kind of secondary. You know, if he's in fisticuffs, it may be too late for his plan.
Okay. Well, hey, obviously you two guys are some of the people who've had the most experience so far with Third Ed. Seth, what's been your experience? Have you had a chance to play test it yet?
Just a little bit here and there. We now that the rule book is out, my gaming group is getting ready to run an actual DCA campaign. So that's the first chance I'll really get to play it a lot. But I like it a lot. I think it took a lot of what was great about Mutants and Masterminds and really has kind of helped kind of focus and streamline it in some really nice ways. I love the slimmed down skills. I love, the way that advantages are set up now, and I think there were some really nice tweaks made to powers.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've been looking over the book myself. I haven't had a chance to run it, but I'm really eager to.
Yeah.
So, hey, Steve, you still with us?
Yep.
I just wanted to hit you up. Apparently, you've got some clearance to talk in a little more detail about how you designed your build for your guy. Thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about, the actual game mechanics of, how you built the system to accommodate the character.
Well, which character are you talking about?
The one you're allowed to talk about.
Dr. Light.
Yeah.
He was a tricky one in that he had a very large array, and he had changed a lot in the comics in recent years. He went from Mr. Goofy to the guy who caused a lot of trauma and change in the universe. So I had to touch upon how he had his powers vary depending upon how he's represented. And he at one point also used to use light-based technology. So his background's also been messed around with a little bit. So it's odd actually talking about this, because the first time we talked about Dr. Light, I couldn't mention any of the but he's a largely power-based character.
You weren't able to mention any. We lost you for a second there. You couldn't mention any of the what last time?
Any of the rules, because the book hadn't been out yet, so we couldn't even say advantages.
Well, hey, it's been lifted now, so we can talk a little bit more about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's basically just got a very large array that it has a wide range of stuff, and the good thing about the third edition is that.
Say again, Steve.
Power stunt or extra effort. The third edition system is so streamlined that it's more accommodating, in my opinion, for extra effort.
Okay.
So anything you don't see in the rules there as is, and you're like, hey, in this issue, he did this or he did that. How come it's not there? The power stunting accommodates it, especially characters who already have arrays. So I just think that's one of the benefits of the third edition system. Same. I had the Dr. Light, who has been brought back as a Black Lantern as I was writing the character. So, talking with John, do you want me to write this guy up as a Black Lantern? Do you want me to write him up as he was before he was a Black Lantern? There was a lot of that back and forth at the time. So, thankfully, Blackest Night is over and everybody's kind of settling down.
Now, Dr. Light, if I memory serves, he's dead after Blackest Night, right? Hello?
Pardon me?
Dr. Light's dead after Blackest Night, right?
I believe so, yeah. I haven't actually gone back and looked at it to see what happened to him. When I did the write-up, I was like, okay, up until Blackest Night, and that was it, and I haven't revisited the character since, but...
I can understand. You probably want to like, ooh, I'm done. I'm not going to read anything else.
Well, you're kind of jumping back into some new characters. So for me, it was just like, I need to put some mental distance behind that stuff and get into my new guys all fresh. So I kind of stayed away from the stuff I'd been working on previously.
I can understand that. After Dr. Light, I'd probably need something to cleanse my palate as well, because he's kind of nasty.
Yeah, when you start reading up and like, oh, he had a sadomasochistic orgy with women dressed as superheroines and supervillainesses. Oh, yay. Woo. That's something you want to write about.
Yeah, that's not really one of those comics you give to your niece or nephew to get them into comics. Hey, check this out. Not family friendly.
No, but I did appreciate how the Spectre killed him, though. That was ironically delicious.
Turned him into a candle, didn't he?
And lit him on fire.
Is the Spectre around these days? I haven't seen him.
There's a new Spectre around.
Well, yeah, I knew it was that old Gotham detective, but I hadn't seen him since Final Crisis. I didn't know if he was still around or not.
Yeah, he's shown up a couple times. Just kind of here and there in various storylines. I don't think he has a title where he appears regularly, you know.
Okay, well, that's good. Oh, sorry.
I believe his body was also a Black Lantern, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think that was the last time he showed up.
Well, I need to go back and read Blackest Night a little bit closer then. I was just kind of skimming that one. I've got some event fatigue after the last two or three crises and Countdown and 52. I was just kind of taking a break and just picking up every other issue kind of thing, which is why I haven't been following Brightest Day too closely. But I'm hearing good things so far. So
yeah, it's been pretty good, and there's some interesting things going on. It just has a much different pace to it. I think after the more recent events that. You know, they were 4 or 6 or 8 issues. I think it's taking a while for people to adjust to the idea that Brightest Day is going to run for 26 issues over a year.
So yeah.
It's different, that's for sure.
Ramping up kind of slow. More of a mini-series than a big blockbuster.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, Steve, before the podcast, you had mentioned you had an interesting story where you couldn't mention the names, but you had some interesting developments on something you were working on with the heroes and villains.
Yeah. I was assigned a character that his history had been changed several times, which isn't unusual for DC. The difference was, is the question I asked, John basically answered, well, I have no idea. Let me get back to you. I'll contact DC. And then DC Comics, we don't know either. So,
really? DC told you they didn't know?
Well, they're like, we'll talk. I have a meeting with the writers and editors tomorrow. I'll get back to you. And then when they got back to John and I, it was sort of, we couldn't really hash it out, so we're going to send you some comic books with this character in it, and let's just see what happens. So I got sent these comics. I think they sent me like 10 of them. And this character was just he wasn't even the main part of the story. He was just one of those secondary stories that they have for like 5 pages in the back. And they actually touched upon the information I need, I think, twice for maybe 2 or 3 panels in the entire extent of those comics they sent me. And so at the end, I was like, okay, that was of no help. So I had to go back to John and say, I still don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm just going to have to wing it and see how it turns out. If I have to rewrite it because you and DC aren't happy, then I have to rewrite it. But that
was you.
So the write-up is going to – did you lose me?
A little bit. I get the feeling whatever you write is going to become DC canon is the idea I have here.
Well, I had to – basically when I was writing this thing up, and I was still working on it today because it keeps changing, I'm writing it ambiguously. So there's a lot of possibly and supposedly in parentheses because he was controversial, some of the stuff that happened with this character, and he's been retconned and, you know, like the big surprise, what you thought happened wasn't what happened and stuff like that. So unraveling this character has just been a big puzzle.
I think if you say any more, you're going to give it away.
Well, yeah. So
I can jump in to say that I've definitely encountered some similar things, you know, both with individuals and organizations I've been writing up for heroes and villains. You know, it's really a blast to go back and kind of, you know, read through their whole histories and untangle some of it and try and figure out how to, you know, describe it coherently and concisely. But there are definitely some times, including there's at least one character I was working on for the second book, who's, you know, not a headline character. And so a lot of their appearances over the last 10, 15 years have been kind of cameos or really short appearances, and figuring out, you know, okay, exactly what is this character's through line, you know, and what's been going on with them was definitely tricky. You know, and there's a little bit of hand waving in there.
Yeah, I've always thought if you guys ever get the Marvel license, you know, in some hypothetical alternate universe, whoever has to write the actual origin for Wolverine is going to have a good time like that.
But, I think it would just be one of his complications. You know, it would be even Wolverine isn't sure where he came from.
Complication. Yeah. Who the hell knows? That would be the name of it.
Complication. Writer's fiat. No one's really sure. Changes.
Well, I just thought it was funny that I actually stumped DC Comics. I thought that was a nice little thing to have happen.
I've just talked to
get a reply. Oh, what's going on?
It doesn't shock me. It just some, you know, especially with certain characters who've been retconned a lot. You just kind of, it's nice to know that that they don't know either at the end of the day.
And I think from time to time, their characters just get radioactive. I remember at a convention years ago, actually, you know, hearing a DC editor talk about what characters are radioactive at that point. And at that time, Hawkman was one of those characters.
Yeah, I understand.
About Hawkman, and it was so confusing that they said, look, we just need to not tell any stories about Hawkman for a while until we can sort it out. And then eventually Geoff Johns came along and, you know, did a pretty good job of sorting it out.
Yeah, my understanding was that that's why Grant Morrison invented Azrael, or Azazel, or however you say that guy's name, the winged angel on the Justice League, because he couldn't have Hawkman. He wanted to have a guy with wings as part of the Seven, so he had to invent the angel because, as you say, at that time, Hawkman was considered radioactive, and they just wanted to let him lie fallow for a while.
Yep. I heard that as well.
So that's kind of a bummer. But, yeah, I can see why it has to happen. But, you know, I was reading a column by a guy who was really mad about them killing off Ryan Choi. I have a feeling won't stay dead for very long, but he made kind of an interesting point that it almost looked like they're trying to make the DC universe look like the way it looked in the late 1970s. Because, you know, you have Kyle Rayner's in the background, Wally's in the background, and, you know, the guys who were front and center, you know, Hal Jordan, Barry, and Ray Palmer.
Well, but at the same time, you know, you have Dick Grayson, who is at least temporarily Batman. You know, I think one of the great things about the DC Universe has been, you know, it has a very real sense of legacy. You know, there are some characters that show up in Heroes and Villains multiple times just because they're multiple versions of the character. And, you know, I think DC is still keeping that going in that, you know, the title of Flash passes from one character to another. It's just passing, you know, to characters who have had it before, both for better and worse.
You make a good point. I was kind of fond around Choi, the new Adam, but I understand he wasn't selling well, so something was going to change.
Well,
but,
and that case is kind of a particular shame because, you know, they passed the legacy by killing him, which is a bit of a disappointment. You know, I like it a lot better, you know, when Hal Jordan can come back, but Kyle Rayner is still running around. You know, when Barry Allen can come back, but Wally West is still there in the toy box, you know, for writers to tell stories about. It's kind of a shame when they break one of their toys and say, Andy's not coming back.
I got a feeling Impulse will be back soon because there's a Young Justice cartoon series that they premiered at SDCC.
Bart Allen's back.
Bart Allen's back already?
Mm-hmm.
Him and Superboy.
I must have blinked. They come back with Brightest Day or Blackest Night? Or
The recent Legion storyline. It was a miniseries. What happened is that Superboy, I can't remember what happened with Bart, but Superboy got put in the Kryptonian healing chamber that brought Superman back when they killed him off in the 90s.
Bart came back as part of the Flash event that was going on at the same time that brought Barry Allen back. So that brought him back to being Kid Flash, and then Wally's daughter became the new Impulse.
Oh, I didn't. Okay. Wow. I'm obviously out of the loop the last couple months then. Cool.
Yeah, they just came back from the future, as coy as that sounds. But they're back and.
Rebirth. That's what the Flash series was called. Flash Rebirth. Yeah.
Okay.
Barton's back with the Teen Titans.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, I could just talk to you guys every couple of weeks. I wouldn't have to go to the comic shop anymore. That'd be great. So,
well, granted, we do have a vested interest at the moment.
that's true. It's not just fun. It's also for professional reasons. At least that's what I tell my parents to justify my comic collection these days.
Man, I had to move recently, and I was looking at all the long boxes. I was slipping up the stairs, and I'm like, why am I in this hobby again?
Yeah, when I moved into a house with my now wife, you know, she said, oh, you don't have too much stuff in your apartment to move in. And then I took her to the storage unit where I kept all my comics, and she said, I'm not sure where we're going to keep all those. So. We had a guest bathroom that was stuffed full of comics for a while.
All 32 of my long boxes are sitting in our unfinished basement right now.
You have 32 long boxes? Wow.
Yeah.
I think I'm somewhere in the mid-30s right now.
Well, I have 2 long boxes. You guys are putting me to shame.
Someday.
I barely feel like talking to you guys.
Amateur.
Yeah.
To be fair, some of those are new comics I bought on Wednesday, and an awful lot of them are stuff I picked up over the, you know, out of the quarter boxes and the nickel boxes and cheap bags at conventions. They accumulate.
I know. I understand. I consciously cut back the last couple of years. And a lot of it was, like I said, just event fatigue. After the first month of Countdown, I was like, you know what? Heck with this. And so I just passed on that and Final Crisis completely.
Yeah, for a few years, I worked at WizKids, and I was a game designer doing HeroClix, and that was really nice because we were actually on DC's comp list, so every month a box of comics would show up with everything they put out. And it was really easy to keep up with everything then. It's not so easy when it's on my own dime.
So how was it working at HeroClix? At WizKids.
Oh, I loved it a lot. It was a lot of fun. So
that'd be a great job, I would think.
Yeah, it was very similar to doing it for Mutants and Masterminds, but kind of different. It's slightly different doing it for a miniatures game where there's, you know, not as much story to it, but it was still a lot of fun to work with, you know, a huge palette of characters.
So what was your favorite project while you were at WizKids?
Let's see. Actually, my favorite HeroClix project came just after I left WizKids. I finally got a chance to do the Watchmen set that just came out this summer.
Oh, sweet.
So that was a lot of fun. That's characters we tried to do a number of times over the years and just hadn't really gotten the chance to do it, until the movie came out, and that was kind of an opportunity to do it and try and do it in a way that, you know, honored the comic and the movie. You know, hopefully we got it right without it feeling just kind of like crass merchandising.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm surprised you even got the license to do that.
It's the movie license and not the comic license. So there was actually some very fine negotiating back and forth about exactly what we could refer to and what we couldn't. But I think we did a pretty good job of squeezing in as much as we could.
You know, Alan Moore has probably cursed you.
Well, you know, I think I can handle it.
See, he's just a guy who just has to bite the bullet and admit that, you know what, things evolve, things progress, there's different mediums, enjoy the money.
Yeah, well, I respect that. You know, he complains about it, but at least he doesn't accept the money. So he's not a hypocrite. Yeah. You know, I think he's paid for his complaints one way or another. So
that's one thing about Alan you can definitely say is he sticks by his guns.
Yep.
So well, that's really cool. I actually until we had this conversation, I wasn't aware. Until I was researching you for the podcast, I wasn't aware that even existed, and I was kind of shocked. That's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
I got to wonder, how'd you handle the challenge of, you know, you're playing a miniatures game, so it's all about the combat. Mm-hmm. And if I'm playing Dr. Manhattan, I really don't care who you throw at me. Unless you have tachyons, what am I worried about?
Well, and then, you know, there are a number of godlike characters that have appeared over the years, you know, and actually, I guess, even actual gods. You know, there are figures for Thor and for Odin and Hercules. And, you know, I think players just have to accept as one of the premises of the game that, you know, anyone can be beaten, you know, and HeroClix, kind of like Mutants and Masterminds, has a point scale, you know, so some characters are just tougher and more expensive than others, but, you know, there's still a way around that to find their Achilles heel and take them down, and that was part of the trick, is finding the way to, you know, make them powerful and yet still leave that opening, you know, particularly for characters. There are some giant characters we did, so Dr. Manhattan, we did a Galactus, we did the Spectre and Fin Fang Foom. And really making them, you know, as much about being puzzles of how do I beat this character as, you know, as making them effective in the game.
That's understandable. And you bring up a good point. I'm remembering an old, one of those big events maybe 10 years ago where Parallax was going crazy and tearing up the universe. And it was actually Connor Hawk who took him out with an arrow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was the name of that event? Do you remember? That was back in the 90s.
That was, I think that was... Was that
Zero
Final Hour? Final Night. The Final Night.
Yeah.
Zero Hour was, yeah, was where he finally tried to tear apart the universe.
Yeah, and it was Connor, because the other Green Arrow was dead at the time, Oliver Queen. Connor Hawk took him out, and of course, then there was an epilogue where he's fighting on Oa with Kyle Rayner. But yeah, I guess there's always ways the genre kind of is slippery enough, you can even make an archer. You know, take out a godlike character.
Yeah, it wasn't too long after that Connor Hawke and the Atom took out Darkseid on their own in Grant Morrison's JLA. So
that
was for the archers.
That was because Darkseid's shield was impenetrable but wasn't invisible. So Ray Palmer could shrink down to the size of a photon and slip through when he got in. Yeah, that was back when Grant Morrison was writing the JLA. That was fun stuff. That was really great.
Yeah, Morrison's really, really good about bringing the big ideas into the onto the plate. Like I love DC 1,000,000; it's still one of my favorite events.
That's the Grant Morrison I love right there. It's blowing your mind. It's incredibly tight pacing. There's big stuff happening on every page. But
again, putting more toys in the toy box than he takes out. There's just a huge wealth of ideas that he leaves behind for other people to play with. And that's why it's kind of a shame that I know they're waiting for him to put out his Multiversity series before they really start exploring all the alternate Earths that they introduced in Infinite Crisis. And that's kind of a shame because I'd love to see what other writers and artists could do with some of the worlds that were created.
I think that would make a great web comic if they didn't want to spend the money on the print and the ink. Just because actually almost some kind of web comic format would be great for the multiverse because you could have hey, this is the web comic for the Universe 1. There's one for 52, and here's all the web pages in between.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to happen. But yeah, I'm interested to see what he does. It'd be nice if Chris McLaughlin was here, just because I'd love to see the Freedom Fighters on the. There's an Earth, an alternate Earth where the Nazis won World War II, and the Freedom Fighters are the only remaining. You probably guys know all this. They're the only remaining super team still fighting the Nazis in America.
Yeah, I think in the new 52, that's Earth 10 or something, because it's related to how it was Earth X before. In the pre-crisis multiverse, so now it's Earth 10 in the new lineup.
Yeah, that's I heard an interesting story from Chris. It was supposed to be Earth Swastika, and I want to say it was Archie Goodwin. I forget the editor, but someone said no, we can't have a swastika in a comic book, so he just erased the extra tails, made it Earth X.
that sounds all too possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool stuff. Well, nifty. So you guys are working on Heroes and Villains for DC. And I understand that we're going to have 4 DC books, and as far as we know, that's going to be the end of it.
Yep, that's all they've announced so far. So the core DC adventures they put out, and then Heroes and Villains, and then the DC Universe book that comes after that.
Okay, are you guys looking at any projects with Green Ronin after that wraps up? Because I've heard some hints about they want to grow the Freedomverse a little bit.
Well,
but nothing...
I've talked to.
I'm sorry, Steve. What was that?
Well, I've talked to John and said, I've just kind of put my hat out there saying, if you guys you're interested in it, we've obviously got the experience with 3D, so keep us in mind. But I haven't really delved into it too much because I've got my own stuff that's already keeping me.
Oh, yeah, you're converting all your stuff over to Third Ed for the superpowered license, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's going to be a long haul to get all that done.
Yeah,
especially the martial arts book.
Boy, that was a monster. That's 300 pages. I'm debating myself if I'm going to convert my stuff from second ed to third ed. I kind of want to just stay current, but it is an awful lot of work.
Yeah, I've talked to Green Ronin about doing some other stuff for Mutants and Masterminds. Actually, before John was line developer, he and I wrote the Iron Age source book, and that was a lot of fun for just kind of non-DC M&M. So I might do something like that, and... I've been playing with doing something for the superpowered license, but you guys have already put a ton of good stuff out there, so it's kind of a deep pool to try and jump into.
Well, I think there's always room, and I was researching you for this podcast. I didn't see Iron Age on your resume on your website, but I guess it only goes back to like 2006 or so.
Oh, I'll have to update it.
So, yeah, that's actually kind of. I mean, all the stuff I've been doing is pretty specific to the Cold War. Kind of my obsession is Cold War superheroes. So I've kind of been plowing some of the same ground that you were plowing with Iron Age. But
Iron Age was a really great book to put together, just because I'll admit it. I had a bit of disdain for kind of that era of comics before I really got into it, but it was a lot of fun. To really see, how world history during that period and more importantly, the history of the industry really helped shape some of the comics that were coming out, and tease out some of the, here are the bits you don't like, but there's a lot of great stuff in there too. And I think it can make for some really fun campaigns.
Can you give an example of one or two elements that kind of did that for you?
That were good or that were bad or that I really liked?
That you really liked?
I thought it was really interesting to kind of trace back the history of the Iron Age and, you know, all the way up to kind of the Image explosion, all the way back to, you know, how the Comics Code Authority kind of created it, and then more importantly, how some of kind of the cracks that were created in the Comics Code Authority started paving the way. You know, and I believe that it can be traced back to when Stan Lee actually wrote an issue of Amazing Spider-Man that focused on Spider-Man versus some drug pushers, and the code said, no, you can't print that because it mentions drugs. And Stan Lee and Marvel said, well, you know, we're going to publish it anyway because it publishes it in, you know, it portrays it in a negative light, and, you know, we're actually doing this with the National Drug Education Council, and we're going to put out an issue of Spider-Man without the Comics Code Authority stamp on the cover. You know, and that was where the Comics Code, you know, first started to kind of show some cracks and kind of paved the way for, you know, the stuff that Frank Miller and Alan Moore did in the mid-80s and eventually to Image. And I thought that was a really interesting path to follow.
So what's the ultimate legacy of Image? Do you think that was good for the industry, bad for the industry, somewhere in between?
I think it was definitely good in that it provided for kind of an explosion of possibility and drew attention to comics that weren't DC and Marvel. You know, certainly Image themselves have had some problems since, but there's still great stuff coming out of Image. You know, if nothing else, Invincible is being published by Image right now, and that's great.
Yeah, it's been kind of on my mind lately with the decision between McFarlane and Gaiman coming out just mm-hmm. a week or two ago. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it certainly seems like that you know, that initial agreement was formed with the best of intents, you know, where they said, look, you know, we're all participating in creating this comic, you know, we should all participate in the profits as well. And it's, you know, it's only down the road that they find they didn't sort things out properly.
This happens so often.
Yep, yep.
Well,
handshake agreements are not legal contracts, unfortunately.
Yeah, this is true. It looks like we just lost Steve again, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got that shaky wireless up in his house. So he's in Canada, though, so Bear probably knocked it down. They have a big bear problem up there, I hear. So, well, hey, Seth, I really appreciate your time. Anything else we wanted to touch on before we call it a day?
I think we're good.
All right, well, hey, thanks a lot, and thanks, everyone, tuning in. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Thanks a lot.